Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Sunday night is June 5th, 2016, and we have lost another beautiful person, great, known as the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali, also known as born as Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr. Muhammad Ali passed June 3rd, 2016, and oh my goodness, when I saw it pop up on my screen, I was like, wow, because I really thought that we were going to lose him last year. He made it through, and as we all know, he's been suffering from Parkinson's disease for quite some time. He was an American professional boxer, widely regarded as one of the greatest and most significant sporting figures in history. Boxing is one of my sports that I do like. I'm not really into football, soccer, or baseball, basketball, but I do enjoy watching boxing, which is a very brutal sport. But I do enjoy boxing. I did have an opportunity to go to not a Muhammad Ali fight, but Riddick Bowe and Evander Holyfield fight in Las Vegas. That time when the little man came down in a homemade helicopter contraption, whatever that thing was. I was at that fight. So I do enjoy boxing, and so I was quite saddened to hear the news. But of course, you know, we knew eventually he would pass, just like all of us. But Muhammad Ali, we're going to miss you. We thank you for your contribution and standing up and not going to the Vietnam War. I remember so many times hearing and seeing the clips of Muhammad Ali speaking about why he shouldn't go to fight a yellow man, because a yellow man not attacking him, it's the people here. And I just was so proud hearing someone like that stand up for what he felt was right. He was inspiring, controversial, and a polarizing figure both inside and outside of the ring. He was born in Louisville, Kentucky. He began training when he was 12 years old. At the age of 22, he won the World Heavyweight Championship from Sonny Liston in an upset, and that fight took place in 1964. Shortly after that, he converted to Islam, changed his name to Ali. After being inspired by Elijah Muhammad, peace be upon him. And he gave a message of racial pride for African Americans and resistance to white domination. 2 years after winning the heavyweight title, he further antagonized the white establishment by refusing to be conscripted into the U.S. military, citing his religious beliefs as opposition to American involvement in the Vietnam War. He was eventually arrested, found guilty of draft evasion charges, and stripped of his boxing titles. He successfully appealed in the U.S. Supreme Court, which overturned his conviction in 1971. That's my birth year. By that time, he had not fought for nearly 4 years, losing a period of peak performance as an athlete. He was a conscientious objector to the war, and this made him an iconic figure. You know, I read that Bill Clinton will give the eulogy for Ali, and at Ali's request. Now, some of his most notable fights were the Rumble in the Jungle against George Foreman, which he won in the eighth round. I believe he predicted that he would win that fight too in the eighth round, and that was in Zaire, which is now the Democratic Republic of Congo, and that was a great fight. That was great. That fight is often shown on ESPN, or you can catch it on YouTube. He retired from boxing in 1981. Now, Ali won that fight by using what he coined like the rope-a-dope. So the rope-a-dope is when you lean against the rope, and that way the punches thrown by your opposition are pretty much you're insulated from those punches because you have the rope pretty much holding you, and therefore your body is not sustaining those punches as hard as they normally would. So the punches are not as brutally felt. So he was able to come back and throw a few punches and knock Foreman out. I think there was almost like a 10-year difference between them. I think Foreman was like 20. I think he was 24, 22, something like, no, 24, 25. I think Ali was 32 at that time, 32 when he fought that fight, you know, so not a 10-year difference. But so Ali won that fight, the Rumble in the Jungle. I keep saying jumble. Rumble in the Jungle. And then he had the Thriller in Manila fight, and that was with Joe Frazier. You know, and I was glad to see that him and Joe Frazier and his family felt somewhat tormented by Ali, because Ali would call him a gorilla and talk about his family and things like that. But it was all in the name of just promoting himself. And but George Frazier took it pretty hard, and George Frazier's children were tormented in school also. But they came together, and so all of that was water under the bridge, thank goodness. Welcome in, Feather Light. How are you tonight? Namaste.
Namaste. I'm beautiful, beautiful. Yes, yes. I'm glad you're honoring Ali. I loved watching his fights growing up. I really did. My mom was, she would just get so emotional whenever he was fighting. She would turn her head like, oh my God. She would cover her face, and she said, oh, who's going to get it? Oh, I mean, she acted as if that was her child. Mm-hmm. She really did.
Yeah.
He had so much confidence. He was the first person that I really, you know, became aware of that was so confident in himself and backed it up. I mean, sometimes you can be so confident in yourself, mm-hmm. and you may or may not have all that going on, but mm-hmm. the next thing you know, I mean, it's manifested in itself, you know.
Right.
You have other people thinking the same as what you're saying, and then it just happens. You know, he did lose a few, you know. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like he let it get under his skin, or as if he just took his tail between his legs and was like, oh, that's okay, that's all right, I'll be back. You know, I'll win the next one. You know, he was great. He was really the greatest. Mm-hmm. He really was.
I used to love to hear him say, "I'm the greatest of all time."
Yeah.
I'm so pretty. I'm so pretty. He was a mess, boy. I used to watch the fights with my dad. Yeah, and just listening to all of his little rhymes and
right, he was talented.
He was knock him out, and you know, yeah. Now he truly did possess. Before it became popular, it seems like he possessed the power of I am. He stated
yes.
who he was and what he was going to do.
Yes.
He would always say, I told you I was going to do this. I told you. And for all y'all that didn't believe me, I told you this and I told you this. You know, he was always
he sure
himself.
Was.
That was the power of I am. Just believing in
yourself. It was.
Nobody else
it
believes
was.
In you. You have to believe in you. And you have to be your
and
greatest
yourself.
Promoter.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Be your biggest fan.
Be your biggest fan. Do you know how he started boxing? I was watching the Ali film on Netflix, and you can pull that up, listeners, if you want to kind of hear his story, like a visual autobiography. Ali.
No, please share.
Y'all know I love Netflix. so he was inspired to box. Because a police officer actually told him to go to this boxing ring and learn how to fight because somebody stole his bicycle, I believe that's what it was. Yeah, somebody stole his bicycle, and so he wanted to fight the thief, but the officer told him, well, you better learn how to box first. And so he directed him to this boxing ring and boxing gym. And he learned how to fight. And, you know, there's a famous boxing gym here, Reverend Ray. He owns a boxing ring in Third Ward. And if you go in there, there are pictures of Muhammad Ali on the wall because Muhammad Ali fought there.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. At Reverend Ray's gym, right? You know, we went over there for a few events, and we had some meetings over there, too.
Okay.
Right here in Third Ward. When we had that poetry contest. Over there in Third Ward.
Oh, yes. That was it? Okay.
He came here to fight right there at that ring. And speaking of Houston, Texas, you know, another great boxer. Oh, my God. Lord have mercy. I'm completely drawing a blank. I just had a brain freeze.
Yes.
Come on, help me out. Galveston, Joe. Wait a minute. I can't believe I'm drawing a brain. I'm having a brain freeze on his name right now. Good God Almighty, it'll come to me though. But down in Galveston, the street name after him and everything. I'll get it before the night is over. But right now we're talking about Ali anyway. Look that up for me if you get a chance.
Yes, I am.
So that's how Muhammad Ali was inspired to start his boxing career. He had a boxing camp where his family would cook. They welcomed everybody to come in and train, and reporters and celebrities would come by. And, you know, I had completely forgotten about this incident. I think it was in 1981. And Muhammad Ali prevented this man from committing suicide. This man was about to jump out of a window. And Muhammad Ali came, and he had a talk with him, and, you know, he was giving him some inspirational, giving him inspiration to continue on with his life and not jump out of the window, so he was able to talk him out of that. I think that was in 1981.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And you know,
he was very inspirational.
He was. I mean, he inspired me just by standing up and willing to relinquish his career,
right,
and for what he believed in, as opposed to going to fight some people that had nothing to do with the harassment and discrimination that we were subjected to here. In the state,
right.
and that's how I feel right now to this day, because of hearing what Muhammad Ali said, and I was like, I would never ever want to go to the war, because that's right, these people have done nothing to us, nothing to me, And like Muhammad Ali said, if they came over here and bombed us, he would be the first one to fight. But Vietnam did not. So I truly respect him. I respect him for that. Let me see. I have a clip I want to play from Muhammad Ali. And then we're going to go into a mind, body, and spirit. Let me see here. Before I pull that up, let me just give out the number for people to call. Tonight we're talking, we're having a tribute to Muhammad Ali and our part two of child support issues. People that, parents that are having issues with child support, and that includes paying your child support, should you pay it, why you should pay it, if you're having visitation issues with the other parent, what to do, what not to do. So we want to talk about that and how to handle that breakup when children are involved. So let's see here. Let me play.
Jack Johnson.
Thank you, Jack Johnson. Because with Jack Johnson, I kept wanting to say Jackson. Yeah, I kept wanting to say Joe, thinking of Joe Lewis. But Jack Johnson, exactly. And the man law was invented behind Jack Johnson. And
that right.
was when you take a person across the border, because Jack Johnson, he loved ladies, he loved the white women, and people did not like that. So
nope.
Jack Johnson, he was always known to drive around in these fancy cars and had these fancy clothes on. And the police would always stop him, and he would get him a $100 bill and tell him, well, this is for when I come back, because I'm going to squeeze when I come back through here. And he'd just go ahead on here and be like, look, here, let me go on and give you this $100 right now, because when I come back around through here, I will be speeding again.
I will be speeding again.
I will be speeding again, okay? I will be speeding again. So let me see. Let me, Muhammad Ali, let's play this one right here.
Mosques set up in the major prisons throughout the United States, in the prisons.
Shortly put, are the black Muslims taking you for a ride?
I said not black Muslims, Muslims.
I beg your pardon, are the Muslims taking you for a ride?
No, the white people have been taking us for a ride for the past 400 years in America. The Muslims are straightening me up and teaching me the truth and saving my life so that I can see the hereafter. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us the religion of Islam, and I will die for it and give everything. But as far as taking me for a ride concerned, I've been the one that was taking me for a ride and still taking my people for a ride is the white people.
Tell me, champ, would you have been prepared to go into the army if it hadn't been for the Vietnam War?
No, under no conditions do we take part in wars to take lives of other humans.
Houston, Texas, 8 o'clock Friday morning. Enter Clay with bodyguard. To him, larger bodyguard of cameramen and reporter.
Good morning, champ. How's it going to go this morning?
Champion.
Still going to not take the step.
No comments.
No comments?
No comments.
Their action will be registered in a matter of 2 or 3 hours from then. Still no comments.
You're registered here right now.
But you know that you're not going to take the step.
Is that not true?
No comments.
Why have you suddenly...
Clay's first taste of military life, and quite possibly his only one, was at the induction or call-up center at the old post office building in Houston. Just before lunch, it's all over. But Clay is not telling what happened in the private ceremony where one pace forward would have meant acceptance of the call-up.
We'll be talking to him while we're here.
No comment. All of that will be in here. Everything you can ask him will be in here right after the thing.
From Clay himself, nothing. The man they used to call the Louisville Lip and Cass the Gas had forsworn speech for the time being.
Are you talking to us, champ?
All I have here is statements that I have prepared. Statements that I have prepared answering all of your questions on future fights.
Come on, Eddie.
The future period. Anything you can think of. I have the statements, and I have them to be released now.
Could you state briefly why you declined?
No, I will not say nothing. It's all in here.
The statement said that Clay would have been untrue to his religion if he'd accepted the draft. Clay and his advisors were more anxious that they should be recognized as a proper church, whose ministers were on a level with other ministers.
Won't you say anything other than that?
That's all. Just no comment on boxing, religion, induction, no comments on the weather or nothing.
For the press?
No comments on the press. All I have to say is no comment.
Do you like Houston, Muhammad Ali?
Yes, I love Houston. This is my home.
No comment. Are you satisfied with the way that people are treating you here?
No comments on the way the people are treating me.
Were you hoping for a more preferable draft situation here in Houston, Muhammad Ali?
No comments on the draft situation. No, every question you ask me is useless. No more comments.
And that was Muhammad Ali in Houston, Texas. No comment, no comment.
No comment. No comment.
No comment. On the weather.
I love
nothing
it.
Else. No comment.
How's my mama doing? No comment.
No comment. No comment. All right. You have a mind, body, and spirit for us, Feather Light.
Yes, I do. I may break this up because we're at 9:20 right now, but I want to start with self-love. You know, we're all about loving yourself. The lack of self-love is the root of all suffering. That's different, huh? The lack of self-love is the root of all suffering. Think about it. Think of how different things would be if all black people loved themselves. I can speak on that from experience. They say the best people to speak on a particular subject are those who've been there. You spend some time walking in those shoes. You see, I'm just coming out. That's why my theme song, one of them, is I'm Coming Out. I've spent over half my life, I'll be 65 in a few weeks, woo-hoo, making sure everyone else was okay, neglecting my own self. So I'd like to share with the audience 8 things that can get you started on truly loving yourself. So I'll give you time to get a pen and paper. Meanwhile, I have a new thing, some black girls, you know it already, right? All of Me.
Oh, yeah.
All of Me. Yes, by John Legend. You know, it won a Grammy or two or what have you. And he sings this song to his wife. But I sing it to myself in the mirror as I'm dancing, doing what I love, and on this fast, upbeat version that they have. All of me loves all of you, love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. You get it? All your curves and your edges, all your perfect imperfections, right? See, I'm not a singer, but I can dance my ass off. I'm a dancer. That's my thing. But I just made myself vulnerable by singing something I don't normally do on national radio because I'm trying to make a point. I'm not perfect, but I'm authentic. You are too. We are all authentic. We have to own that. Another phrase is, you're my downfall and you're my muse, M-U-S-E. He's saying, you bring me down, you frustrate me, you take me through changes, but you also lift and inspire me. Muse is artistic inspiration. I am my own muse. I do that for myself. I lift myself up. Sometimes I do some crazy things and I'll say, why did you do that? That was kind of off the wall. But then times, I'll lift myself up and I'll pat myself on the back and I'll say, hey, I did that. you know. So I am my own downfall and my muse. You're my end and my beginning. Even when I lose, I'm winning. You're my end and my beginning. Even when I lose, I'm winning. So things won't always be rosy. They're not meant to be rosy all the time. How else would we learn? I've fallen many times, and as many times as I've fallen, I'm still in the game. I'm still winning. I am my beginning, and I am my ending. So, has everybody got pen and paper?
Yep.
Number one, forget about the retouch. As in photography, retouch. You know, you take a picture, you lighten it, you darken it, you sharpen it, you crop it. Sometimes we want to retouch everything about our body. Our features, not the weight. The weight goes up and down. I mean our features, the things that we're born with. Accept and love the way you are. There was a time when I'd take a picture of myself and I'd go, oh, that's too dark. You know, because I'm dark-skinned. I'm a chocolate drop. Now, if I lighten the picture, it's to see the picture better, not because I don't like the color of my skin. I love my skin now. The resistance to certain body parts, your coloring of the skin, the shape of your nose, whatever you, forget about that. Better still own it. Look at your body in the mirror and say, goodness gracious, my body is sexy. My toes are beautiful. I like my cheekbones. You have beautiful cheekbones, by the way, Black Rose. Look at your cheekbones. I like my cheekbones. Focus on one part of your body every single day that you like. If you had to exchange your body for a new one, there are some things you know you would want to keep. I love my smile. I love my small head. I love my defined shoulders. I used to hate my legs. That's a feature. And that song by Joe Tex, you know, Who Wants the Lady with the Skinny Legs? I couldn't stand that song. I'd snatch it off as soon as I heard it playing. But then, after so many years, I started looking at people who had these big, fat elephant legs with no definition. What do I say now, Black Rose?
Slender legs.
Slender-shaped legs. Yes. With petite ankles, not stalks. So love your body. Forget the retouch. Number two, I'll give you number two and we'll go to a quick commercial. Pack your plate full of karma-free foods. Sometimes we don't pay attention to what we're eating. We get greasy, fatty, unhealthy processed foods, and we expect to feel good about ourselves. What you eat affects how you feel. We need to feel worthy of spending those few extra dollars on healthy eating. Some people say, oh, it costs too much. Well, we do it for clothes. We do it for shoes.
Oh, yeah. Hair.
We do it for our hair. Oh, my God. Some women pay. Oh, my. Yes, yes. $50, $60, $80 for a 2-week hairstyle. 2 weeks go on and don't let it rain. And it's just shot. Some women will not even pay $5 for a good facial cleanser or a $10 moisturizer. And I say to people, when someone looks at you, they see your skin first. Your face is hidden under all that makeup. So you're not loving yourself. Get some strawberries, avocados, watercress, cilantro, hemp seed, things like that as an alternative to meat and two vegetables, bread and tea for lunch. Make yourself a smoothie out of oranges and apples, avocado, pineapples, food for the pineal gland, banana, that tryptophan that makes you feel good, that feel-good hormone, cilantro, which removes toxins from your body, chia seeds for the amino acids. Learn what foods go together. Eat a handful of blackberries, like you said the other day, in the morning. Just throw them in your mouth before you sit down for that big old fat breakfast. Good bland food. Yes, blueberries. I'm sorry, blueberries. My niece, your cousin, always says, when you eat shit, you're going to eventually feel like shit. And that's true. So think about that. We can go to a commercial, and I will come back with number three. Well, we can do number three. We got 1 minute left, and this is a quick one. Do what you love. Do what makes you feel you have your greatest power. Find your childhood passion and try to do it every single day. Do what makes you feel most alive. It doesn't have to be with somebody else. It can be by yourself, but it makes you feel really, really good, really wonderful. Find what that is and try to do it every single day. I try to dance every day because I just feel like I'm Wonder Woman when I'm dancing. So we need to do that. Find out what you love. Yeah,
find out what you love. Find out your passion and your purpose. Mm-hmm. I love
your
it.
Okay,
we'll come
passion,
right back
your person.
To finish up on your mind, body, and spirit. You're listening to The Lotus Place, and we will be right back.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Do you have a bodyguard? Do you have...
No.
You don't?
I got one bodyguard. He has no eyes, though he sees. He has no ears, though he hears. He remembers everything with the aid of mind and memory. When he wishes to create a thing, he just orders it to be and it comes into existence. But this order is not conveyed in words, which takes a tongue to formulate or with sound carries ears. He hears the secrets of those under quiet thoughts. He stops those whom, who's that? That's God. Oh, he's my bodyguard. He's your bodyguard. See, in the Holy Quran, it says, not one soul comes on earth without the permission of Allah, God. Not one soul leaves without the permission. When you die, it's time. So if it happens, it happens. It's God's will. When he wishes to create a thing, he just orders it to be and it comes into existence. He hears the secrets of those under quiet thoughts. That's God, Allah. He's the supreme.
All right, and we're back here at the Lotus Place with our tribute to Muhammad Ali, and we're also discussing child support issues, paying your child support, what to do if you don't have those visitation rights. Don't just not pay the child support. Go to court and get your visitation rights. If you really want to see your child, then fight to see your child. That's for fathers and mothers. And so we'll also play a few clips on child support, how to obtain those visitation rights, and talk about those issues with child support. You're listening to The Lotus Place. You can call in at 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032, press pound, and then press star 61 if you'd like to speak. And we have a caller. We'll come to our caller after our mind, body, and spirit. So let's pick back up. Featherlight, you on what?
Oh, right. I'm on number four.
Number four
of the eight things to do to improve your self-love. The lack of self-love is the root of all suffering. We're on number four. Number four, accept all compliments. Sometimes we have trouble accepting a compliment. Feature speaker, Muhammad Ali did not have any problems with that whatsoever. Sometimes people can't say thank you. That's a beautiful dress. Oh, this whole thing, I got this. And you go with this long, drawn-out thing trying to put it down. Just smile and say thank you, you know? sometimes, you know, it's not even bad to secretly to say to secretly say to yourself, thank you, I know, like JJ, I know, you know,
exactly.
It's okay, okay, you don't have to feel guilty of how amazing you are.
Mm-hmm.
And give compliments to yourself. You've accomplished a lot. If you're still here, you've accomplished a lot. Number five, give yourself attention. Take better care of yourself. Express yourself. Realize you are worthy of anybody's attention, no matter who they are. They can be the senator. They can be a congressman. You deserve their attention. No one is better than you. Build your confidence. Like Ali, build your own confidence. Number six, let it go. Chill. Rest your body. I need to say this to myself. Aja, rest your body. Take care of yourself. Don't take things so personal. This is not a reflection of you, what people think. That's just where their mind is, and you cannot control their mind or their thoughts. Number seven, stop doing things that cause you grief just to be nice. Now, this is a really, really serious one. So this is going to tie into what we talked about on Friday. What is this, brain freeze night? This is what we talked about on Friday, codependency, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So bending over backwards to please. You lose in the end because you neglect yourself for someone else's happiness. I'm not referring to minor children. I mean, you know, you help your children, you know. Sometimes we got to give them the last piece of bread. I'm talking about grown folks here. Once they grow up, don't be like the man with the cocoon. He saw a butterfly struggling on the ground, trying to push himself through this small hole in the cocoon he was in, and after watching for about an hour or so and thinking he was helping, the man took some scissors and made a small incision in the cocoon so the creature could come out more easily and with less effort. But little did he know that this was nature taking place, metamorphosis. By squeezing himself through the tiny hole, although difficult, the creature released excess weight, which allowed him to complete the change from a caterpillar to the lightweight butterfly that he was intended to be. But because the man, as he thought, made things easy for the butterfly by making the hole larger, the excess weight stayed on. And the butterfly had a swollen body and shriveled wings and was too heavy to take to the air. The butterfly spent the rest of his life crawling on the ground. So here's what the man, in his kindness, and what this is what we do, did not understand. The butterfly can fly only because it has to struggle to come out of the cocoon. The pushing forces enzymes from the body to his wingtips, and it strengthens the wing muscles, and at the same time, it reduces the body weight, which allows the butterfly to fly. And this process started with struggle, and it ended with the butterfly flying the moment it came out of the cocoon. And the struggle was part of what the butterfly needed to do in order to fly. Without the struggle, the butterfly was destined to crawl around on its belly and probably die an early life. Life is full of struggles or challenges, as we call them. They hone our skills and make us strong. People who enable other people take this away. And this is called codependency, as we discussed on Wednesday. These caregivers, they're well-meaning, but their intentions create a lot of harm and rarely result in a good outcome. It's painful, I know, to watch a loved one struggle with drugs and alcohol and just life's daily challenges, but it's not our job to do their work for them and thus keep them in codependency. That's not our job. That's their job. It is the butterfly's job to beat its wings against the cocoon until it emerges and flies away. Our job is to stand by in support and love, remembering that experiencing dark times can be necessary for transformation out of codependency. And sometimes you can help your children and others so much so that they can never fly on their own. Struggle is good, and it makes you better. Finally, number 8, find your own signature. Don't imitate other people. I used to do that. I used to imitate my best friend because I thought she was just beautiful and classy, could trick somebody out and still be classy. She could play cards and still dance. I mean, she could do everything. But I finally started appreciating just who I am. Nobody's like me. Find out what separates you from the norm. Find out what makes you awesome. This allows you to stop competing with other self, because you lose yourself in the process of competing with other people. And remember, there is nobody, nobody, nobody like you. You're pretty awesome. I know it sounds corny, but it's true. You are awesome, and you are authentic. Love yourself 100% and spark someone's life who just may change the world. Chillax and breathe in some of that good prana. Namaste.
Namaste. Namaste. Thank you. Oh, wow. Codependency.
Yes.
That is really something that a lot of us have to work on.
Thank you.
Yeah, hand clap for that.
Yes, a lot of us are doing that.
And that's just not the way to do it. You know, I always attribute that to, like, a person, they will not stop using drugs unless they want to. You can't force that person to stop that, to kick that habit, unless that's something that they actually want to do, and then
ready
you can
to do
them. You can be there.
Yes, and you can't. You can't shame them. You can't belittle them. You can't do anything. It has to come from within.
From within.
They have to make up their mind.
Let's welcome in Icy Hot. Icy Hot is on the line. Hi.
Namaste.
Namaste. Namaste.
Hi. Namaste. Namaste.
Yes. How's it going there in Minnesota?
Hey, it's in divine order and wonderful.
Divine order. I know that's right.
Wonderful. Divine order. Excellent. That's the way it is. It's a divine order.
Divine order. Let's take our caller that's been holding so patiently. Thank you so much. Welcome in, caller.
Well, greetings, ladies. How are you today?
Oh, Sarah.
Ah, namaste, Sarah.
Namaste, Mother Zola. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Fantastic. Splendid.
Well,
splendid. Fantabulous.
Yes, ma'am.
Good to hear your voice.
Yours as well, ladies. It's Icy Hot. Where's Delta?
Delta hasn't joined us yet. Delta must be getting the babies in the bed.
Oh, okay.
Delta needed to hear this about codependency.
Oh.
I'll tell it to her face.
Okay. Yes,
yeah, maybe
lady.
You'll read a few more when she joins us. What's going on with you, Sarah?
Oh, nothing much is going on with me, but I was enjoying the tribute you were playing to Muhammad Ali and his transition into the ancestral realm. But, you know, I was checking out the different people who are out there, especially these white people. You see, it's always, once Muhammad Ali became old, feeble, and Parkinson took a hold of him, and he lost his ability to communicate where he could know him, as you played in all those clips, the man was full of self-love. He was very confident, which a lot of people say he was being arrogant because he was telling it, this is what I plan on doing. And you could say something and bring it into reality, and that's what he did. He talked his victory into reality. He said it's going to be out in 2 or out in 4, and that's what happened. That's what he did. Yes. And a lot of people thought, oh, he's being so arrogant, he's being whatever. But no, that's who that's who he was. And he was a very loving from everything, from everyone that say he was a sweet person. But these white people now all of a sudden they wanted to claim Muhammad Ali because, as I said, once the Parkinson took hold of him, he wasn't talking about it. Oh, he's a hero. But they forgot what Muhammad Ali says. My enemy is not in South Asia with the Vietnamese. My enemy is right here at home.
Right.
Yeah, that's why he said I'm not gonna go and strap up and go and fight and kill people who don't call me nigger. He said no, Vietnamese never call me no nigger.
You're right. He sure did. He sure did.
Yep. And he put these white people on notice, and they hated him for that. But once he became Parkinson's hit him, and he no longer had that voice to say all the things that he was saying before. All of a sudden, they could love him because now you see that's how white people like you when you no longer a threat. He was no longer that threat.
Yes.
That big threat.
Right. You're no longer a threat.
Yeah. So they could
force
all of this love, all of this folk fakeness, having an Olympic torch, you know, for the Atlanta Games, and all of this other nonsense that they start doing, and then all of a sudden, you know, the thing that really pissed me off is Bill Clinton being chosen to do the eulogy.
Are you serious? I read
that he wanted Bill Clinton to give his eulogy. Why? I don't know.
Okay. Well, if that's what he wanted, he liked Bill, so go on, Bill.
No, I don't think he liked him. But you see, now, at this point in time, with Hillary Clinton leading the black vote, this is going to cement her position.
How do we know he said that? I don't trust half the stuff that I see in the media. I do not trust it anymore. I really don't. Just because it's in the media, I swear, I do not trust everything that I read in the media.
No,
look at what they said about Prince. I just don't trust it.
I don't
hear him say it himself.
I don't trust it either.
But and his voice, you know, first of all, they disrespected the man and the man's religion because according to Islamic tradition, you're supposed to be buried within 72 hours of your passing. This man transitioned on Friday. He should have been in the ground by now. Why did he have a traditional funeral on this coming Friday? That's a week away. They've already violated the Islamic rights for his funeral.
For themselves to get themselves together.
Just to put on a show. If they want to do a memorial service in his hometown, they could go ahead and do a private Islamic ceremony. Get the man buried. He should have been in the ground by today. And then his hometown could do a memorial without the body being present. You don't have to have a body in order to do a memorial service.
No, you don't. You don't. Mine isn't going to be there.
Exactly. But like I said,
mine's going to be a memorial.
Well, you know, however people you want to do it, but as you said, you know, we have gotten, like white people have gotten, you know, where the whole idea with them with funerals and the showing of the body is something from the barbaric region of Europe where these white people, in order that they have conquered their enemy and they have laid out dead on the ground. That's why they have a viewing and they have a display of the body because it came from European. It's to show that they have that the enemy that they went after, he's indeed dead, and here is the remains. Now you can
there you go.
Whatever it is, you
there you go.
Body. And we have the same customs where we have these long lines and the open casket and everybody going around the casket and doing all
right.
These times. This is not traditional. It is not a traditional African rites of passage. So this was very disrespectful because when I heard the length of time it's going to take for the funeral and who is supposed to be there and all of these celebrity lineups or whatever, I said this is going to be a showpiece. They're trying to turn this.
You know that.
Once again, they're trying to do to him like they with Dr. King. Once Dr. King was getting involved, they can soften him up, make him into this colorblind, kind of gentler person.
Exactly.
Yeah, they've been trying with Malcolm X for the past 50 years, and they haven't quite got it yet. So now they're going to try and do the same thing with Muhammad Ali. Oh, he was the greatest. He represented the United States and all in the Olympics in Rome, and he did this. But they're not going to talk about Ali was so disgusted that he threw his medal, his gold medal, he threw it into the river. Because when he came back from the Olympics, there in Kentucky, when he came back from the Olympics and he went downtown, he couldn't even go downtown and eat in a restaurant because he was still segregated.
Sure didn't.
They did tell
that one. I heard that one about he threw it in the river.
But at the Atlanta Games, they went ahead and they gave him a duplicate, a replica of the one that he won when he went to the games in Italy. I think it was back in 62 or whatever it was that he went and he won his gold medal. They gave him a replacement there. But they don't. You see, they don't talk about these things that the man was very. Was a very pan-Africanist. He was all about black people.
Definitely.
Ali. Yeah. You never hear him with no other woman. He was always with black women.
That's right. One thing that he said, Sarah, if I could just speak on that right there, what you just mentioned, he said that he loves his black women and he don't want to be with no other woman. He want to be with his black woman. And he said that that's what he believes in because when you start, and I know Dale Takula can appreciate this because, you know, she sure don't like race mixing. And Muhammad Ali said that if you mix a Chinese person with, a black person, then they're going to be arguing because that Chinese person want to listen to Chinese music, the black person want to listen to black music, so it's always going to be a confrontation. And he said that a black woman knows him and they can relate. And that's who he wanted to be with. So that's another thing that I truly, truly did respect about him. Thanks for bringing that up, Sarah.
Yeah, indeed, the man showed a lot of self-respect. And we can't forget that, you know, by him coming in under the Nation of Islam, Malcolm X influenced over him, even though him and Malcolm X, they had a split after Malcolm left the Nation, and they had that rift between them. But Malcolm still had a strong influence over Muhammad. And
he sure did.
Helped to groom him, and even though he ended up leaving the Nation and Muhammad Ali, he went and he followed Sunni Islam. He left the Nation and he went, you know, did the same thing as Waris, you know, Elijah Muhammad's son did when they had the split after the Elijah Muhammad died and everybody went, you know, split the Nation and Waris went and he went to Sunni Islam. But, you know, the man was always about black people problems. He did a lot of things. He was always for black people. He was always in the area. He was never up without putting on airs. He would come out there, shake a hand, give you a hug, do the things that
walk through the community.
Walk through
him
the community.
And Jim Jones.
He never
spent time with children.
Yeah. He never tried to set himself as some celebrity. Oh, I'm this and I'm that, and I got all this big entourage, and you know, and I can't be bothered with you. And you know, people run up to him, and you want to blow them off. And so, he was never like that. He was always about the community because he knew he came from the community. The community is what pushed him and gave him, put him up to where he's at. And he never let the community down to let them know how much he appreciates all that they have done for him. And Bill Clinton being the one to do this eulogy, it is rubbing me raw because this is going to be a boost to Hillary Clinton in the polling for her.
Oh,
it's going to bump her up.
It sure will.
It's going to bump her up with black people because black women have already lost their damn mind behind Hillary Clinton. Now,
exactly.
Now, to do this damn eulogy is really and truly going to set her up, you know, as a fat rat.
Wow.
So I'm truly disgusted, you know, with his wife that she has allowed them to talk her into putting on this farce that they're about to do in Kentucky for him. They should have done it for him when he was alive, you know, do all of that, show all of that fakeness when the man was alive. Wow. Y'all didn't give a damn. Y'all call him a draft dodger, all this kind of stuff.
Sure did.
Yeah,
he was certainly persecuted, for real.
Yes, he was.
Let's see. Delta. Hey, Delta. Greetings,
hey,
Delta.
Hey, everybody. How everybody doing tonight?
Hey.
Hey, we doing good.
Namaste, Delta Cougar.
Oh, I was just enjoying a lot of the conversation about Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
You know what? The only thing I can say, he was one of the greatest boxers. He will go down in history. And now, I must tell y'all something about it, because it will be coming out in the news, because it's all over Facebook. Muhammad Ali had 9 kids, and really they said he had 2 sons, but really he only had 1 biological son. So the other son he must have adopted from one of the wives, because he'd been married 4 times, and I'm saying to say this. But they had his son on TV, and the son had gave an interview about 2 months ago before he died. I don't know if y'all seen this. The son gave an interview, and the son said he was living on welfare and food stamps, and he hadn't had no contact with his daddy. He's from the first wife, and said he hadn't had no contact with his daddy for years and years. And he
he's from the second wife. He's from that's Muhammad Jr. He's with the wife Khalila from Chicago. Mm-hmm. He lives in Chicago, and that stuff has been floating around for about a year now. They've been talking about that, and he was saying that he hasn't been able. But you know, a 40-something-year-old man, because that boy is almost pushing 50. If you all are almost pushing 50, as what's the name, Mother Zola was talking about, codependency and enabling our children. No, not because your daddy's name.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
You can't traffic on your father's name that you see the king children do every day of time. They're telling their damn daddy's name, and they want a fee. Every time you want to call Dr. King's name, you got to pay them a fee for it. No, you can't do that with Muhammad Ali. You should have been out there. You should have been able to establish yourself. I'm sure Muhammad helped you along the way. You almost 50 goddamn years old, and you come talking about you on welfare and you can't take care of yourself. That's on you.
Exactly. You're a grown ass man.
And he did say this, though. The young man did say this today, though. He says that he had opportunities, but some of the opportunities that he couldn't take, he didn't take it. So that let me know that your father tried to help you, but you didn't take the road, because he said he had some opportunities. It's not all his father's fault. It's his fault too, because he said he had opportunities along the way and he didn't take them.
Malcolm X. One thing that Muhammad Ali did was, even his children that he had out of wedlock, and Lord knows he, you know, loved ladies, he always made sure that all the children were able to play together. And he did he had a lot of recordings of his children, and he said, you know, conversations with his children. He said that you'll appreciate this. And so he was very, very family oriented. He always loved his children, spent time with them. So I'm more inclined to believe that he would have welcomed that child then, just like he did his other children out of wedlock.
He did help his children, because that was his second wife, Khalila. When him and Khalila split, that was the son that he had with her amongst the other children, because they all, that was at a time when he was still in the Nation of Islam, because he met her when she was at Sister Clara Muhammad School. She was still a student there in Chicago. That's where he met his second wife. And they forgot how many children that he had with Khalila before he ended up with Veronica Porsche, and end up having Layla and, you know, her other sister with Veronica. And then the fourth wife is the one that he's with now, Lonnie. But you can't blame your daddy, because I'm sure your father, if you are his only biological son, you know how men are about their sons. I'm sure he did everything that he could to push you, give you all the guidance, get you the right direction. But some children, because they figure that they want to travel on their parents' name, their parents' fame.
Exactly.
My daddy is Muhammad Ali. He's the most famous person throughout the world. The man is more famous than some presidents. He would be recognized anywhere in the world Muhammad Ali go. He's a well-recognized person, more than all these celebrities. So you figure that you're going to traffic on his name, especially because you're Muhammad Ali Jr., too. You should have been, you should have been, get yourself something to do.
Right. And I think that a lot of these, sometimes these children of these famous parents like that, if they're not doing very, very well, they want to use as an excuse and say, well, he didn't help me. That's why I am where I am today. You know, whine and cry and try to get sympathy from other people and use as an excuse. Walk on your own two legs, you know. They do that. They do that. I've seen that happen.
I told you, you know, these were the king children. These were those three that were still alive.
Bill Gates said that he wasn't going to leave his kids any money. He said that the most important thing that he left his kids is he gave every last one of them a highly good education.
Bill Gates is a damn liar. He leaving his children some money. He can say all the crap that he want to say. He can get that so money. White people ain't gonna, because their money gonna have to go through at least three or four generations from now. That money gotta still be out there multiplying. So he gonna leave his children. He gonna put some money in their hands to give them a head start, so his grandchildren and great grandchildren they can still be trading off of the Microsoft name. He ain't gonna
exactly
leave his company. He is not going to do that to put and run his company to the ground, just like with Steve Jobs or with Apple. He's going to make sure that for future generation, at least three or four generations, that money is going to still be there, just like you see with all of the Rothschilds and the all of
right.
them generate hundreds of years later, that name is still being called and they still got money floating. No, white people
exactly.
are making money to throw money away like that. No.
No, because that's what they do. That's what they do. They put something aside. They have trust funds, little secret trust
yes.
funds.
They
make sure that money. Yes, they believe in that.
They believe in leaving a legacy for their children. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with a clip on Muhammad Ali and Delta Cougar's Hot Topics. You're listening to the Lotus Place Radio Show, and we will be right back. And you can call in also 641-715-3660. And share your comments and thoughts. We are talking about Muhammad Ali, a tribute to Muhammad Ali, as well as child support issues. And we'll come back in the second hour also and pick up on that topic.
There's great interest in the fact that you have joined the Muslim religion. How long have you had this interest, Cassius?
Oh, for the past 6 years, I would say, after hearing a lot of teachings on Negro history and who we were before we got here. And one in one makes two.
You feel your affiliation with the Muslim religion, being a follower of the Muslim religion, had something to do with your winning the championship?
Well, I would say so. My religion is what the only thing that I can give me credit for pulling me through, because 99 out of 100 seemed to see no possibility of me winning. The newspaper reporters and everybody all over the world condemned me. They said it would be a mismatch, and everybody, couldn't nobody believe it. So my prayers to Allah and faith in my religion, living a clean, righteous life, I have to say that's what pulled me through.
Malcolm X, I want to talk with you briefly about your affiliation with Cassius. How long have you known him?
About 3 years.
And have you been advising him as far as his religious affiliations are concerned?
Well, no, I don't give advice to anyone. He's my brother and my friend. I express what I know and understand around him, but he has a mind of his own and understanding.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Here. No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Things are getting much better, but I always wonder when I went to church on Sundays. I've always been one to, I'm not just a boxer. I do a lot of reading, a lot of studying. I ask questions. I travel these countries and watch how their people live, and I learn. And I always ask my mother, I said, Mother, how come is everything white? I said, why is Jesus white with blonde and blue eyes? Why is the Lord's Supper all white men? Angels are white. Hope. and Mary and every, even the angels. I said, Mother, when we die, do we go to heaven? She said, naturally, we go to heaven. I said, well, what happened to all the black angels they took the pictures? I said, oh, I know. If the white folks was in heaven too, then the black angels were in the kitchen preparing the milk and honey. I said, listen, you quit saying that. Well, I was always curious and I always wondered why I had to die to go to heaven. Why I couldn't have pretty cars and good money and nice homes now. Why do I have to wait till I die to get milk and honey? And I said, Mama, I don't want no milk and honey. I like steaks and I said, milk and honey is a laxative anyway. They have a lot of bathrooms in heaven. So anyway, I was always curious. I always wondered why. You know, Tarzan is the king of the jungle in Africa. He was white. White man. I saw this white man swinging in Africa with a diaper on, hollering. Oh! You all see Tarzan over here?
Right.
Tarzan? And all the Africans, so he's beating them up and breaking the lion's jaw. And here's Tarzan talking to the animals. And the Africans been there for centuries, and he yet can't talk to the animals. Only Tarzan can talk to the animals. I always wonder why Miss America was always white. All the beautiful brown women in America, beautiful suntans, beauty shapes, all tight complexions, but she always was white. And Miss World was always white. And Miss Universe was always white. And then they got some stuff called White House cigars, white swan soap, king white soap, white cloud tissue paper, white rain hair rinse, white tornado flow wax. Everything was white. And the angel food cake was the white cake, and the devil food cake was the chocolate cake. I said, Mama, why is everything white? I always wondered, you know, and the president lived in the White House. And Mary had a little lamb, his feet as white as snow, and snow white. And everything was white. Santa Claus was white. And everything bad was black. The little ugly duckling was a black duck. And the black cat was the bad luck. And if I threaten you, I'm going to blackmail you. I said, Mama, why don't they call it white male? They lie too. I was always curious. And then this is when I knew something was wrong. Won the Olympic gold medal in Rome, Italy. Olympic champion, the Russian standing right here, and the Pole right here. Is Poland considered a communist country?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm defeating America's so-called threats or enemies. And the flag is going, ton, 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 ton. I'm standing so proud. Ton, 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 ton. And I done whooped the world for America. Ton, ton, ton. I took my gold medal, thought I'd invented something. I said, man, I know I'm going to get my people freedom now. I'm the champion of the whole world, Olympic champion. I know I can eat downtown now. And I went downtown that day, had my big old medal on and went in the restaurants. At that time, black things weren't integrated. The black folks couldn't eat downtown. And I went downtown, and I sat down, and I said, you know, a cup of coffee, a hot dog. He said, the lady said, we don't serve Negroes. I'm so mad. I said, I don't eat them either. Just give me a cup of my You know, I said, I'm the Olympic gold medal. And 3 days ago, I fought for this country in Rome. I won the gold medal, and I'm going to eat. The manager heard of tell the manager. And she says, he said, well, I'm not the man that he's got to go out. Anyway, I didn't raise no money, they put me out. And I had to leave that restaurant in my hometown where I went to church and served in their Christianity and fought and daddy fought in all the wars. Just wanted to go mentally and couldn't eat downtown. I said, something's wrong. And from then on, I've been a Muslim.
Yes, I was going to ask him about what attracted you to the
truth. But the teachings of Elijah Muhammad on how black people's been brainwashed, how they've been taught to love white and hate black. Have we been robbed of our names in slavery? We were robbed of our culture. We were robbed of our true history. So it left us a walking dead man. So you got black people in all white country, and they don't know nothing about themselves. They don't speak the language. They're just mentally dead. And this is happening all over the world. But the first place that will rise will be the black people of America, and then the rest of them will. But I was one who heard the truth. And when I heard the truth about my name was not Cassius Clay, I know a black man in America named John Hawkins. Now, you know who John Hawkins was. He was a slave trader from England. But the white people at that time, if one had five slaves and his name was Jones, they would be called Jones property. If you was auctioned off to Mr. Smith, your name was Smith. identifying you as property of certain masters. So now that I'm free, now that I'm no longer a slave, then I want a name of my ancestors, Muhammad Ali. Like a Chinese, how would a Chinese look named Robert Smith? how would a German look named Edward Goldberg? A Jewish name. So like, when I heard that we don't have our names, we don't speak our true Arabic language, we were robbed of Islam, our true religion, and we've been made deaf, dumb, and blind in slavery, and Elijah Muhammad was taught by Allah, who we refer to as God, to teach us the truth that will free us. And when I heard it, I've been free ever since. I have no racial problems. I don't go where I'm not wanted. I'm proud, and Islam did it. So, and after these things that I heard in church, preaching, watching this and that, I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't pinpoint it. But as soon as I heard the truth that Elijah Muhammad teaches us in America, it made me accept it.
I know that's right, and that's how I felt. I used to always say, God, dog, why we always have to see everything on TV that's white, 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 white? White, 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 white. White women's hair flowing, Wella Blossom commercials, and all of this. Like he said, white, what is it, angel food cake. White,
right.
Devil food cake, black male.
Black.
Really make you think.
Yeah, I mean, and I used to feel the same way coming up. I said, it's something is just not right. Why all the black people in the project?
And like for the holidays.
White poor families.
Right.
How about the devil food cake?
Black Friday, because they go into the black and come out of the red at the end of the year. Yeah, you know, why is it always like that? What's up, King B? Welcome in.
Hey, I want you all to know this brother was so against white supremacy, where he stood 3 years for not wanting to go into Vietnam. He said that prolific statement I never will forget. He said, ain't no Viet Cong ever called me a nigger.
That's right.
And would suffer to lose his license for 3 long years. It is just astounding that, thank God, Muhammad Ali was no Al Sharpton. Now, y'all don't hear me.
We hear you. He stood by his beliefs.
Exactly. And paid a heavy price for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the very
but it was
idea
worth it.
That the likes of Bill Clinton will be given part of the eulogy is an abomination, because
it is.
When I've only saw that Bernie Sanders, who wants to be the next president, has yet to tell the world what the Clintons are doing to the Haitian people, as we're talking, and are trying to thrust out in the throats of the Haitian people. Already had a stooge in power, and he was told, leave now or your life is in danger, so he chose to leave. His name is Marcherie. They're now trying to push this clown that the Clintons want to be in office. They done built 2 skyscraper hotels in Port-au-Prince, and they got at least 10,000 acres of land in Haiti.
They own more land in Haiti than the Haitians do now.
Thank you. And this is something that needs to be told to the world, because these people called the Clintons, they're like a bad corn on your foot. A bad corn.
Worse than that.
They are a wart. Yeah, they are like a cancer that has metastasized. And Malcolm X said it all. He said, there is no difference between a wolf and a fox. He said, they're both canine. They both belong in the doghouse. The wolf is Trump. The fox is Hillary Clinton. And the idea that black folks swear by Hillary, we are the only race of people that believe in punishing our friends and rewarding our enemies. We're the only race that do that. Yes. So, you know, how do you deal with the people that refuse to see the light and don't mind being played on? This is the tragedy.
It's a tragedy.
Well, with what Muhammad Ali said in the last clip that you just played, where he talked about all of the beauty pageants, the Miss America, the Miss Universe, the Miss World, all white people, and it showed how white people like to showcase their women. They want to make them seem that they are the world. They are not. These people are less than 8% of the world population, but yet in everything, they have been dominant. It's only now within the past, I would say within the past 30 or so years, where you're seeing that the so-called Latino and even the so-called Latino women that they've shown, like Miss Venezuela, Miss Brazil, Argentina, that they've been putting up there to win these Miss Universe or whatever pageants, these are white people. They're white people that speak Spanish or speak Portuguese. They just have a darker tan. But it's always been white women. Every once in a while, they might throw in an Asian woman from Indonesia or the Philippines or somewhere or from off the African continent. But black people are the majority people on this planet. I don't care what anybody want to talk about. Whether it's not the Chinese, it's not the Indians, even though China might have 1 billion people in China, there might be 1 billion plus people in India. They're not the majority on this planet. African people are the majority, because you find us on every damn continent, you find black people. We're the majority on the continent.
Everyone.
We're the majority in South and North America, on the American continent. We are the majority.
And we're still walking around saying that we're minorities, Sarah.
Exactly.
We let them tell us we're minorities.
Right.
They put a minority clause in there because white people know eventually they're going to take over that civil rights, and they're going to be able to use that minority clause to benefit themselves, which is what they're doing now with this so-called LGBTQ movement. They have made themselves a minority within a majority. That's why they put that in there, because they already knew in advance that they were the real damn minorities. That's why I don't ever refer to myself as no minority, because I'm not.
Nope.
I'm the majority. We are the majority people on this planet, because everywhere you go on the planet, you find black people. Even them so-called Eskimos that you go all the way up in Alaska in the damn North Pole, they're brown-skinned people. They ain't white, they ain't pink. They're brown.
So can we please stop telling our children that we're minority? Can we as black people stop that right now? Let's stop calling ourselves minority. We're the majority. Dr. Francis Chris Wilson used to talk about that.
Yes, peace be upon her. You know, she was
upon
right. Many ancestors be pleased with her and the work that she has left here, because she has done her work and she has left a legacy, just like the same thing with Amos Wilson. Peace be upon the brother as well. You know, may he rest and be rewarded by the ancestors, because these people have done the work. They have laid out the blueprint, to quote Dr. Amos Wilson's most famous book, Blueprint for Black Power. These people have laid us the work, and they have put it out here. They have left the manifesto out here for us to follow, just like the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. Peace be upon him as well.
Peace be upon him.
Yes.
But we don't want to follow. We don't want to follow these instructions.
Delta, come on with your hot topics. I know you have some more for us.
Hello?
Yep.
Hey. Okay. Well, our first one we got coming from North Carolina. There was a mother who was 52 years old, white woman, I must say. She had a daughter that was 13, and she had a daughter that was 15. And one of the daughters was a special needs, severely special needs. The mother had her two daughters, a white woman, had her two daughters prostituting, the 13-year-old and the special needs, and the other girl, they said she was kind of slow. She was prostituting. Her daughters had been prostituting them for many years. She was prostituting them for $5. $10 and $20. And she told her girls they had to prostitute because their daddy was sick, and they had to, she needed the money to pay the bills and get the medicine. So the father passed away,
And when the father passed away, one of the girls asked the mother, "Do we still have to do this? Daddy is gone now. Why do we still have to do it?" So the young lady was really upset about it. She went and told someone that what her mother had them doing. But how can you take a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old, and one of them is severely mentally challenged, and prostitute them, and been prostituting them for a long time? And this is in South Carolina, and this sounds just like white trailer trash, but she is white. So let me move on. Then we have a mother, a black mother who's 42 years old, no, a white mother who's 42 years old, have a son, 21 and 15. They have a black family, moved, listen where they moved from. They moved from Alabama, and they moved to Illinois. And they said they left Alabama because they knew it was racism in Alabama. So they go to move to Illinois, because trying to get away from where, you know, racism, they was basically saying. And
they
moved
went from
up
the
there.
Frying pan to the skillet.
Yeah, right.
And so she moves to Illinois. And
you said these people are white?
No, these are the white people who did the incident. But the mother is white to these two boys. The mother is 42, 21. She got a boy 21, boy 15. But the people they done it to, I'm going to tell you the story, are black. So this white mother that's 42 and her two sons, they was down at the beach. They saw a little two black boys swimming. They were swimming at the creek. The mother and her two sons deliberately went over and tried to kill the mother. Now, listen to what I'm saying. This is how children learn hate. They learn this from their parents. And they want to know why the kids do what they do. They do it because it is learned. They have been taught this. The mother and the two sons walks over to the pond and begin to drown a 15-year-old black boy. The boy was screaming and howling, so he had a brother that was 19 trying to get them off of his brother. He could not get them off. They held him down in the water so long that the boy literally came up not breathing. And they called the law, and they was arrested. And they charged him with a hate crime, but this happened in Illinois. So the black mother says she moved from Alabama thinking that she was taking her child, her two sons, to a better life, and moved up to Illinois, and it's just as worse here.
That's
she what
she know,
said.
Man.
She said
always
she
has, always
she
has been.
But she said she wouldn't have never thought that this would happen there.
Why?
They,
I don't understand.
Read your
why.
History.
I
read
mean,
your
like,
history.
Ida B. Wells documented.
I've been reading her papers lately.
She hadn't studied history.
As much as they have going on in Chicago, I mean, she don't even have to. Oh Lord, whatever. I don't know what's
okay,
wrong with these people.
They just read
well,
and listen to news.
Yes, you're right. Let's end on a good positive note. We're moving right on up to your hometown, Ashir, Memphis. We have a young black man, a young black boy who is a teenager in high school. Mm. He have been throwing newspapers for the last 5 years, and this is a good story. And this, I'm just like something Sarah said, you got to want to do something. And this is the truth. Even though Ali Boy had the name, he could have took his daddy's name and did something with it on his own, but he chose not to. But anyway, this young man, threw newspapers for 5 years because he wanted to go to college, and he knew his parents could not afford for him to go to college. This young man have paid his whole tuition for a 4-year college. He had paid it in full. And he did it by throwing newspapers, and he ain't no more than 17 years old. And he's been doing this for 5 years. He threw newspapers and paid his college off in 4 years. Now when he graduates from high school, he will go off to college and owe no money whatsoever. So you, if you wanna get out of your situation, you can, but you gotta want it.
That's right.
And, you gotta work for it.
Yeah, it's correct. And this young man worked 5 years doing newspapers and paid for his college.
The moderator for the Mormon Choir, I was quite young listening to the Mormon Choir, and it was Richard Evans. He said something that I'll never forget. He said, "Though you may teach, it shall not be reached until you practice what you preach." You have to, your child has to see you being true to your word, setting an example. And that young man was motivated by parents that he knew loved him, but he was motivated to do something for himself, to know that his parents wanted to see the best for him, but they could not afford to send him away to college. So he was motivated to do something for himself. A lot of our young people have too much material things, and our parents, the parents of today, they don't want, many of them don't want to teach their children. You have to be aware that nothing you get is free. Only salvation is free. But our young people today are so into the material thing, because what they see on the video and what the society teaches them, get all these material things, and then you can be considered in with the in crowd. So, you got two young girls arrested here in Brooklyn for beating an older woman, an elderly woman, because she asked them could they move their feet so she could sit down.
Yes, I saw that.
And this is at 2:30 in the daytime, and a whole lot of people saw these girls beating up on.
And didn't stop them.
They didn't do anything.
So much of the credit to their parents, their mothers brought them to the police station. So, like I said, there are those young people who are out there, like this young man, who don't get the publicity that they should, but they're very much in need of encouragement, and not to feel that you are a punk or a sissy or something is weird, that you like to do things honestly, working, doing an honest day's living. I think it's a wonderful thing that this young man chose to sell newspaper. Can you imagine how much newspaper he must have sold?
That's quite a bit.
That is absolutely great. So now he won't have all the college debt like a lot of us have, like myself.
Hey,
I think they
too.
Said the average amount of debt that a college graduate has now is like a minimum of like $30,000 or $35,000. Mine is double that. So.
Same here.
Did anybody hear about the little boy that was abducted? He was 13 years of age. He was abducted in Detroit, I think like Tuesday, I believe.
Yes, I do that story, yes. And they killed him?
Right.
Yes, I sent you that.
But the man was found. They found one of the guys. What happened is one man, he dropped some money outside of a store.
$75, yes.
And the little boy picked it up. I think he was riding a bicycle, and he picked the money up, and then the man caught him, and they shoved him into a van, and it was like a lot of people saw it. I think it was even on video camera and all of that.
That is correct, and nobody stopped him.
Well, I guess they
didn't stop him, because if you look at the video real good, he had the gun out. So that's probably why nobody stopped him.
But nobody, they didn't get the license plate or anything?
Yes, they got the license plate. The people did do that.
So, yeah,
but
they were able to
track
him down.
Physically go over and try to stop him. But they couldn't because he had the gun out. If you look on the video, he got the gun out.
Was these black people?
You know it was, Sarah. Yeah. You know it was.
Yeah, they were black, Sarah. Unfortunately,
yeah,
they were. Idiot black people, and they found one of the guys in Ohio,
and I don't know where they found the other man, but yeah, they arrested both of them. Yeah. Poor little boy was found dead. And then
what town was that?
In Detroit. In Detroit. Enchanted, that man up there who beat the rapist, man was about to rape his wife. He caught him coming out the elevator.
Yes,
so
yes.
He was arrested, but they released him, right?
And he's being held
as a hero. He beat that man. That man took a crowbar. What happened?
He should have whooped the hell out of him.
He killed him. Didn't he kill him?
He killed him. Yeah.
Where was
this
at?
The crowbar. In the Bronx, up there.
In the Bronx, yes, in the Bronx. Mm. But see, now,
was it a black boy he killed?
Some little idiot black boy.
Yeah, he had. Black man had in and out of prison. He was. You know, the system failed many times. If you got mental problems, they just give you medication. They don't see if your medication is properly administered, taken properly. So when you constantly go in and out of prison. You got mental problems. Then you get high off other drugs, and you end up where you do commit a capital crime. Now here's the problem for that husband. He had left the apartment and went after this guy. The guy was out of the house. Now from what I'm hearing, that he will face charges that might bring on a conviction. The grand jury wants to convict him. Basically, the DA wants to go after him for the fact that he had left the man had left the apartment, and even though the crime was committed, the husband was not in the apartment when the man was committing the crime. The man had already left the apartment. He was half naked, but the husband caught the man getting on the elevator. He had a tire iron and beat the man in the elevator with the tire iron. So
wouldn't that be considered as a passion killing?
Well, you see, you remember the sister in Florida named Michelle Alexander? She was using this. Her husband was an abusive husband. She had a court order of protection, and she fired her pistol in the air to warn her husband, who was
I remember that.
Well, she got jailed. The woman who made sure that the prosecutor is a racist predator, Angela Corey, a racist predator, she personally made sure this woman here was sentenced to jail.
Tried to
get her. And I wrote letters to her for support of her. And I hear nothing from black women organizations, the National Organization of Women, you know, but she was in jail for a little while before she could finally got freed, I think, on a house arrest. She was placed on the house arrest. But I don't know if she has been exonerated, but, you know, like, when you commit, the husband, she fired in the air. No one was hurt. She fired in the air to tell her husband, this is it. You're never going to abuse me anymore. This husband in the Bronx, the attacker, had left the house. And this might be someone who knows legal lawyering. This is going to be a very sticky thing unless...
Oh, Cantor, we lost you. But we need
well,
to take a break.
He sounds like my brother-in-law, because he did the same thing to him with my mother-in-law. He chased the man out. He chased the man trying to break into my mother-in-law's house, and he was already gone. And my brother-in-law found him headed up the street. And he ran and chased him down and beat the crap out of him.
Well, good for him.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Black.
He wasn't charged, was he, Sarah? I was just asking Sarah. Was he charged?
Yes, he was. They charged him.
He was.
Yeah, they said he was. They called attempted murder because they said he wasn't on the premises. They said if he had caught him on the premises while he broke in and did all of that, then it would have been a no situation. But since the man had already left the property,
which is probably a scanty would think with this man. The man had already left the apartment and was on his way out. You should have dragged him back into the apartment and then beat him with a tire iron.
Well, I know that's right. Beat him with that tire, drag him right on back in. And let's take a quick break and let's come back on our child support topic, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Lotus Place Radio Show.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Held his own against students who had a far better formal education than he.
I'm saying you're talking about me about some draft, and all of you white boys are breaking your neck to get to Switzerland and Canada and London. I'm not going to help nobody get something my Negroes don't have. If I'm going to die, I'll die now right here fighting you. If I'm going to die, you my enemy. My enemy is the white people, not Viet Cong or Chinese or Japanese. You my opposer when I want freedom. You my opposer when I want justice. You my opposer. And I want equality. You won't even stand up for me in America for my religious beliefs, and you want me to go somewhere and fight, but you won't even stand up for me here at home.
If she won't let you see the child, the only remedy is to seek counsel. They're going to take you to a process where you have to have a paternity established if you weren't married to her. If you were married to her, all children born during the course of the marriage in the state of Louisiana are presumed to be yours anyway. You would then, after paternity, you then ask for visitation. And usually people ask for that within the same document for visit, proof of paternity and visitation. Or custody, if you're seeking custody. If you guys live in the same city and that's practical. But basically, you'd seek counsel and they'd ask for these things on your behalf. Once these things are put in place, which generally is arrived at by either you guys talking it out and you guys arriving at an arrangement, or a hearing is held if you guys can't come to an agreement, and then a judgment is filed, putting the stipulations of what the visitation and or custody will be. Once one of the individuals is non-compliant, whether that be you or the young lady, next thing you know, you're held in contempt and held accountable for sticking to the agreement that you guys put in place. Modifications can be made to the agreement if either individual deals with a substantial change in their life that would be deleterious to the child or that would harm the child. But for that, though, when the circumstances are the same as they are at the time that the order is put in place, then you guys have to toe the line. She's got to, you know, do what she needs to do so that you can have visitation, and you have to do what you agreed to do to make sure that a visitation runs smoothly. Otherwise, the one that's non-compliant could have a contempt order filed on them, and they could face jail time. So that's how you go about getting visitation when she's unwilling to let you see the child. All right, see you guys next week.
All right, we're back here at the Lotus Place, and you can go and donate to Black Talk Radio Network so that we can keep these shows going on. If you just go on to the Black Talk Network radio page and just click the donate button and make your donation. So we're picking back up on what we discussed on Friday night, child support and child support issues, visitation rights. And what made me think about discussing this is a friend of mine told me that he was arrested because of neglect of child support payments. And he said that he wasn't making the payments because the mother wouldn't allow him to see his child. And, you know, I'm just thinking, like, why didn't you just fight that in the court? I mean, I know a lot of guys who have been denied visitation privileges, but they just simply went through the court system, and they were allowed either joint custody or visitation rights. I know a lot of men who have custody of their children. So I just was like, that's crazy. You probably just didn't want to pay the child support, because I know he has about five or six children. So he probably just didn't want to
pay the darn child support. I don't know. But nevertheless, his tail was locked up. And that's just ridiculous. So let's pick back up on our child support topic. And I know Delta, you said you were going to have your son call in.
I did. I sent them a text, and I talked to them, and I told them to call in. So I don't know if they're on the line or not, but I did send them a text and ask them to call in. But I must say, I must say this, I have a cousin, and this is a true story, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
He was real popular with the lady. He stands about 6'4", and the ladies loved him. You know how some ladies just like glue on a man? Mm-hmm. This man, this is a true story, this man have over 30-some kids.
Oh, my God.
I promise you. From so many different women. And he says, when he was young, now this is what he said. He said, when I was young, I thought it was cute. He said, but now as I got older, he said, I wished I could go back and change some things. He said, I would not be the young, silly man that I was coming up. He have over 30 kids. This is no lie. This is a true story. But this is what I don't know. Why would
it took him a long time?
But why would a woman that already know a man got 5 or 6 kids, and he don't do nothing for them, and you go take up with it? You crazy to lay down with a man?
Well, you know what? I don't even want to date a man that has like more than 4 children that are like, you know, not in college, or even if they are in college, because your money needs to go to them. And see, I know I'm gonna have
exactly.
my hand out. Right.
Exactly.
I know I have my hand out. So I don't wanna take the food out of any children's mouths. So you need to go take care of those children. So that's
right.
Period. I don't even want to date you. You three or four children, you need to be taking care of them. You don't have time for me. You don't
exactly
you do not have time for me. You should not have time for me, because you got to take these children here and there. You got to pay for all of this stuff. They need to be in.
You got to go to their ball games and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Spend time with them.
All of this stuff. You don't have the money. You don't have the money for me. You don't have money to do hardly anything, because children are expensive, and it's beyond the money. It's the time. You need to be spending time with those children.
And you're going to have baby mama issues, definitely.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to be speaking on. You know, where does he have the time? If you have 30 children spread out, where do you have to spend this quality time with these children? You don't. You don't have that time to spend with these children, because it's not so much, a lot of children, it's not so much the money that they didn't get from you. It's that they never saw you. You never came around. You never
Spent
them in place. You never spent time with them. That is what these children, they miss more so than you just coming and throwing them a new pair of Jordans or whatever.
Right.
You want to buy a gift to them.
Right. Right.
Exactly.
Totally agree with that. Totally. So
and give some of this blame to these men too. Not always just these women. I mean, these men going around popping out, putting all these babies in the air. I mean, they're being irresponsible as well.
Exactly. He should have put on. He should have had a doggone raincoat on. That's what he should have been wearing. He should have been wearing a doggone raincoat. Because it don't make no sense. Because first of all, pregnancy is not the worst that could have happened. You could end up with some kind of incurable disease. That you could end up with syphilis, gonorrhea, you know, chlamydia. You name it. You could have any kind of disease. Because if you're running around here sticking yourself in all these different various holes, you know, making babies, you know. That's you know, like I always tell, you know, some of these men, I said, y'all spend 9 months trying to get out your mother's womb, and you're going to spend the rest of your life getting into everybody else's womb.
Exactly.
That's the doggone problem with them. 9 months you struggle, you want to get out.
Okay, yeah. Now y'all know I have a different point of view. And
of course you do.
That's what I love about our show. It is so great. We have such an awesome show, because we all come from different walks of life, different walks of education. We all come from different, we all have different backgrounds, and that's, and we all have different point of views, and that's what I like. So my point of view is, and people say, oh, you say that because you have three sons. No, I don't say that because I have three sons. Let me tell y'all again, where when you hear me talk, you hear me, it's the way my mother have raised me. Not because I have three sons. It's because how I was raised by my mother. My mother told me these words from a little bitty girl. She told me, don't shame the family. My daddy said, you better not shame the family. If you do, I'm going to kick it out of you. That was my daddy's words. Knowing, he probably wouldn't have done it, but he had us scared to death, and we believed him. My mother told me these words right here. She said, a man, hear me, young ladies, hear me real good. My mother said, a man cannot do no more than you let him do to you. My mother said, you have totally control over your body. My mother says he cannot do anything except you allow him to do it to you. This is how I was brought up. And I'm saying to say this, young ladies, you got to protect your body. If you don't want a bunch of kids, do not put yourself in that predicament. If you young ladies, now listen, everybody loves sex. That's the way God made it for. He made it for us to enjoy sex, but he made it for husband and wife. Okay, we know he made it for husband and wife, but we know we got some young people today gonna have sex. Okay, and I must tell my little sinful things too. I hadn't always been in the church, you know. I used to do some things too, but I had sense enough to know I would not bring shame on my family. I would not do this. I would not get a baby. Now, I'm not going to tell you it didn't happen in my family. Yes, it did. I had a sister to get pregnant, and she had to get married. She got married. Then I had another sister get pregnant. She didn't get married. They took that baby and gave it to the sister and the husband who was already married. Y'all know how they did back in the day. So this is what I'm saying. You have to protect yourself, young ladies. No man, don't wait for a man to put something on. You put something on. You have the key to your success. You got to put in your mind, okay, I know he already got one baby. He ain't doing, now you already know he ain't doing nothing for that baby because he's living there with you on your welfare and food stamps. So why you would go and have a baby with him? See, I never thought like that. I always, see, they call me gold digger. I always look for somebody who had some money or who somebody who's going to do something for me. When my husband died, he left me three. I was left with three houses, I think. Three at the time. And I could take care of myself. I could see about myself. Do you think that I was going to get anybody else was going to not match me and take up and keep me in a certain lifestyle? I sought out a man to keep me in the same lifestyle. Take a guess what I did. I sure did. I went and found a man who had been working for 28 years on his job, and he retired at 41 years. Young ladies, you got to be smart for yourself. We can't just go, a man going to ride you all day long if you let him. He going to come in and eat your food stamps all day long. He going to take you to work in your own car, put you out and be late coming back to get you. Don't come back to get you. And you standing out beside the road and got to catch a cab looking like a fool, and you got a brand new car, and he riding somebody up in your car while you at work. Come on, girl. Let's be for real, man. You got to save for yourself.
You're right. As you said earlier, these are called enabling actions that women do because you're not allowing them to be a man. A man is supposed to, the person, a man is supposed to be a provider and a protector. And if you can do those two things, then you don't need to be with anybody, with any woman. You need to be, until you need to go and take care of yourself first. You have to do that. You know, too many women out here are raising their sons, and they know their sons are their man. Your sons are not your man. You're not supposed to raise them like that. You're telling them your business. You're dragging them around everywhere you go. They in everything. Today I saw this woman. She had these two young boys. The boys were under the age of 10. She had them with that dyed blonde streak going down their head. Now, I'm just saying, you know, why are you going to put that crap in that boy's head and make him look like some damn little faggot? Why are you going to do that with your black sons? You see, these are the crazy things that black women do to their children, young children on
their
head. You're absolutely correct.
You're
going to take a flip and die in their head. If you want to dye your hair, you go ahead and you do it. But why you want to take your sons and anybody, any beautician or barber, going to let some mother put their sons up in your damn chair and tell you to put that crap in their head and you do it? You got a problem too. Because you should have said, no, sister, you know, I don't think this is right for these boys.
That's right. Well, you know, too, like I see on Facebook, these pictures or Instagram, one of them, some of these young mothers, they'll be dressed up in all of their little colorful stuff, and they'll have a little boy dressed up just like them, and the little boy got his hand on his hip. Yeah, he's sticking his hip out, posing just like his mom. And I just say, oh, my God. Yeah. There are her people to tell her, don't do that to him. But then, you know what?
Right.
Her people kind of messed up, too, I guess, because there's nobody to tell her. You don't dress your boy up like you. Find you a little niece or somebody, one of your friends that has a little girl, and take her out and dress her up like you, not your little boy. I mean, they have on,
not your boy.
How the little girls, they dress, you know, they may have on their little colorful clothes and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had a little boy looking just like them.
Wow. I don't think boys can be in any kind of pastels. I don't want no lime green, no bright orange, none of that crap, no pink. Boys ain't got no business to be in none of that color. And I started, so she said, well, I said I see a whole lot of it wrong. Because you leading them down the wrong path when you start them off at such a young age, putting them in all these fruity-tooty colors, then what the heck do you expect later on in life? It don't make sense you got these boys dressed up like that. Because on my job, like I was telling a friend of mine, they already told us the memo about with the damn bathroom situation. That it don't, regardless of whatever people say that they are, they can go to use any bathroom. I said, no, they don't. They're coming up in there with me. Because all you can be hearing a whole lot of trash can and every doggone thing that's going crazy in this bathroom, you gonna know what's going on. Because there's no big 6'3" man coming up in there with no damn wig and a mini skirt. He ain't coming up in here. He gonna take his behind to the men's bathroom. I don't care what you got on. You ain't coming up in here.
Would you say not in here? Sarah, did you hear about here in Texas, some mother sent her son to school with a little pink frilly dress on?
You see, that's this crap that you are seeing with all of this stuff here, you know, with women watching all of these the Sesame Street and all this other crazy stuff where they're trying to push, because that's where they're pushing this transgender and this crap from. They started from these children's shows. Because if you look at the colors with Barney and all of that, you look at the rainbow colors that they're dressing these cartoon characters up in, and you sit your children in front of the TV and they're watching that stuff, now it becomes normalized for them because that's who they want to get, the children. They don't want to get us. They already know that we already done with. They can't do nothing to us. They have to get the younger generation. And that's why
exactly.
The classroom situation with the school.
You got it.
And everything else, because now
you got
hear children say, I don't see nothing wrong with it if they want to do it. I see a whole lot wrong. Because because what you're setting yourself up for is for somebody to get raped. Because some woman who thinks that she's a man going to walk up into a man's bathroom or a man's locker room, and she's going to get gang rape up in there, and then you're going to have all kinds of confusion. What were these people using before now? Were they all going into the...
Right, exactly. What were you doing?
What's the big importance all of a sudden now that you got to make it into a law and try and force it that you people can use any bathroom and all this nonsense?
This is crazy.
Yes.
This is
crazy. It's lunacy.
It's white men who want to have access to women's bathrooms. That's the whole. That's all this is.
That's
it's
the whole
damn
thing.
White men. They want to go up in
yes.
their women's bathroom.
Yes.
I know at first I wanted them to come up in there with me, and I know that you ain't no damn woman, and you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a serious problem because I don't care what they say on the job. They say, well, if they have a problem, then they can call this number. I said, look, they're going to talk to me. Like, I'm locking the door. I'm locking my bathroom door because ain't no man coming up in here. He needs to go until he gets the sex change and he cut off his dick and he turns into a vagina. He is not coming up in this bathroom. He needs to go
Go through the whole process.
Yeah,
exactly.
This is ridiculous.
Exactly.
What the hell are we doing up in the bathroom? What the women doing in their bathroom? I don't want to know what the men doing in their bathroom. I don't care what y'all doing over there.
I don't care. Look, while we have Sarah on the line, Sarah, let me ask your hear your thoughts on the whole gorilla and the child in Cincinnati.
Look, that
the
is just white people just getting upset because one of their family members got killed, that damn gorilla. Because if you look at some of these white people, I saw this man today. I look at his hands, ladies. This man was pink and he was hairy. And he reminds me of a damn gorilla. He reminds me of a damn chimpanzee because, you know, chimpanzees, they're hairy with them long, skinny fingers. That's what they look. That's why they were so upset. White people get upset when you kill an animal because they know that's where they come from. They're a damn beast. But that's why they get upset. They're not worried about this child. They're worried that a family member is, because, you know, white people always say, well, I'll be a monkey's uncle. Well, they are the damn monkey's uncle, grandfather.
Yeah, I thought that was just really absurd that people be more upset about the darn gorilla, like a child hasn't fallen down in the darn moat before anyway. But I mean, just
because
being upset and want to take the
if
child away.
White, if it was a white person, you wouldn't hear all this outrage because it was a black couple and the gorilla got killed. The same thing like they did with Michael Vick and the doggone dog. That's the same kind of attitude they have. White people are always about their animals. They don't have no sympathy for anyone, especially if you black. They don't have no empathy for us. That's why I don't see why all of us always have to say that their family are yours. I don't know. They're in my family. I do not claim them.
All right, then. Well, any closing comments before we close out? I'll play another Muhammad Ali clip before we close out. But any comments? Any closing thoughts?
No, ladies. Just go ahead and play some more Muhammad Ali because the brother's going to be missed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, peace be upon him. Oh, my goodness. One of my favorites, Muhammad Ali, will truly be missed. And we pray for his family. May they make it through this time. I know this is a difficult time. Oh, yeah. I knew what I wanted to share. I read that his heart, even though his organs failed, his heart continued beating for 30 minutes. Did you all hear that on the
radio? Really? No. Wow.
No.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's an electrical impulse. Don't forget that your organs, if your heart is in the arm, it runs off of electricity. So even though the brain might still be communicating, because they say your brain and your heart, those are the last two things to really shut down before they consider you completely dead. So if the brain was still sending out electrical pulses to the heart, then it would still keep going.
Yeah. What a beautiful person. Well, thank you. Thank you, ladies. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back on Wednesday, and everyone have a prosperous week. Peace, good night, and namaste.
Namaste.
You welcome, please, Muhammad Ali.
I'm not allowed to earn a living here. I'm not allowed to leave the country. And I have about $10 million in contracts in foreign countries, European and African countries. And the government has taken my passport so that I can't go out here to work. Then I cannot work in America. So, and I have, I can name many more people,
but,
you know.
But you can't say, though, can you, Muhammad, the simple thing that one race is righteous and another isn't. We all
I'm not going into that, you know, I just said...
No, but I meant was I can't leave you saying that, in the sense you can't say that one race...
Well, I would say that weapons All of your guns and your bombs and your poisons are created by your white race.
You can't say that, though, Muhammad. We all have faults.
I would say whiskey and homosexuality. If you go back to England, your country, Europe, when they kicked out the old...
Packed with whiskey and homosexuality, you remember, wherever you look.
You remember
look,
when the old... A lot of the whites were kicked out of there. They say there's trash, they say, so-called.
No, but I mean...
They're the ones that landed here.
You can say certain... You can say that there are certain things that, for instance, come and stem from white people. On the other hand, mm-hmm. the black race is equally. We all have our faults.
Well,
cannibalism, where does that come from?
I would say this.
I don't know about cannibalism.
All I know is what you told me in history about it.
You are a wise man. You're an intelligent man. And if I was not a Muslim or follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I couldn't talk to you for 2 minutes. And I believe I can hold my own as an intelligent conversation with you. But it all comes from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But people praise me. Oh, you should be the leader. Well, you don't have to follow Elijah. Man, are you a fool? Everything I got come from him. He taught me who I was. He made me proud. He made me fearless. He made me love my own. I've turned down millions and to keep from selling out my people. The beautiful name Muhammad Ali, I now have 56 Muslim invitations by governments. All they ask me about when I go to those countries, how is Elijah Muhammad?
You believe something which I happen to know isn't true.
Now hold it. See, what is it that I believe?
You believe...
It's not true.
You believe that the entire white community is your enemy. I happen to know it's not your enemy. I doubt if there's anybody in this room who is your enemy.
I tell you what.
But I do believe that just as Hitler persuaded all the Germans to believe that all the Jews were their enemy, that the people are engaged in spreading this kind of virulence, and that some very, very sincere people get caught up in it. You're an example of it.
It was very early on that I recognized that no board inquiring into his intellect could ever sincerely have come to the conclusion that he was too dumb to be drafted, because he was a very bright guy.
22 million black people in America. Who would you say our everyday common enemy is? What other country or what nationality? I mean, you know, you have the nerve to be on a TV show like this and look at me like I'm wrong for saying Elijah Muhammad is poisoning you by telling you that we're your enemies. And I feel it and see it every day. And every black man watching this show know you are enemies. And you have the nerve to stand up here and say Elijah Muhammad is poisoning my mind. He cannot teach us that you are enemy. You taught us. And your people daily, Martin Luther King is bumped off unjustly. Adam Clayton Powell was bumped off unjustly. They took my title unjustly. They killed Megas Ever unjustly. All the integrators who love white folks was unjustly kicked out of Washington. They've been deprived of education and poverty throughout the country.
The extraordinary thing about it is that although I began thinking that he was simply special pleading on his own behalf, I ended up by thinking he was absolutely correct.
Now, Donald, see, I hate you now. Huh? Don't say that. I know now. Well, I was going through Mississippi on a college tour not long ago, stopped at the filling station. They have a long limousine, you know, I pulled through, and I traveled in it because a lot of times I don't like to fly. And the fellow came out. He said, "What must I give you, boy?" And they had a fellow with me. He said, "Boy." I said, "Shut your mouth." Restroom. "Well, I don't think it's working." I said, "Thank you, sir." I'm not going to stand up. I'm the champ of the whole world. You want me to fight for America and I can't even use the toilet? You want me to... I had a right to say, "I'm the Olympic gold medal runner. I'm Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay." He's mad. He called the highway patrol, and a Klansman might be around. I'm way back in there by myself, and I can't box that good. You understand? To avoid that booby trap, I said, "Shut your mouth. We'll go down the highway and find a place we can go." We went a little farther, and we were welcomed in another one. So what I'm trying to say is, I know where to go and where not to go.